If 2020 had a turkey, it would be a tofu turkey. Listen, this clip has nothing to do with what I'm talking about this morning. But man, I hope you guys had an amazing Thanksgiving, and I hope that you didn't have a tofu turkey. One of my favorite, absolutely favorite episodes of Raymond ever, and every turkey season, every Thanksgiving, I like to bring that up. But if there was ever a video that best defined 2020, I believe that was it. I love at one moment she says, we just have to make it through this. We just have to adapt. We just have to make it work. And I wonder how many of us inside of this year has been in that moment where we've had a mouthful of nasty tofu turkey telling ourselves, you just have to adapt. You just have to make it through this. Hope you guys had an incredible Thanksgiving, and so happy you guys are here this morning. As my notes had disappeared. Oh, there they go. Bring them back. Sorry, I don't know how that happened. There we go. Hey, 2020 is almost over. We are 1 month away from the end of 2020. We're cheering because what a year, man. Like, wow. Did you guys think, seriously, thinking back to like end of February, early March, did you guys think that it would be almost December, basically December, and that we would still be sitting in this mess right now? There's no way. Show of hands, has this been a difficult year? If your hand ain't up, you're lying. You probably like tofu turkey. This has lasted way, way longer than any of us thought this was. Here's the crazy thing. The last time that I had the opportunity to speak on a Sunday, because of all the chaos of this year, the last time that I had the opportunity to speak on a Sunday was actually New Year's weekend. So it was back in January. And I talked about New Year's resolutions. We talked about what the Bible has to say about making resolutions. And we all together in this room, if you were here for that, talked through what some resolutions could look like for 2020. And maybe you were in that moment where you made some resolutions for 2020, but I would be willing to bet that you did not follow through on any of them. And it's not because of your own willpower. It's because the world went crazy and the gyms closed. You know, they did a study and it was like 75% of people didn't even know that their gym had closed. Because they never go. But it's lasted way longer than we thought it would. And here's the thing, man. It ain't over. They called this Thanksgiving weekend the mother of all super spreaders. We're already seeing in California where they're already putting people back on lockdown again. You just kind of have to wonder at this point at what point it's going to happen to us. We're going to get thrown back into lockdown again. It's not over. We still have more of this to deal with. But here's the good news. You're a seasoned veteran now. You've been through it. See, here's the crazy thing about this pandemic is when this whole thing started, we didn't know what it was. We didn't know how to respond to it. Because most of us in this room, I would say all of us in this room, have never experienced anything like this before. Ever. We've never been through this. We have no idea how to navigate this. If you're a parent in the room, I'm a parent. I have a 9-year-old and I have a 10-month-old. It has been so difficult to parent through this. Because I don't know how to relate. I don't know what to tell my kids when they ask how to deal with their, so what's happening or what's going to happen, because I've never been through this before. And I watch this like my 9-year-old struggles every single day with virtual. Could you guys imagine when you were that age having to go through something like that? Where you were, for literally a year or more, you weren't allowed to be in school with your friends. You sat in front of a computer all day. I know for my kid, it's borderline torture to have to sit there all day on that computer. And I'll be honest with you, when he gets frustrated and gets flustered and has questions and doesn't know what to do about it, there's many times, most times, I don't know what to tell him. Because we're all navigating this for the first time. We've never been through it before. It's interesting to see how this entire thing has played out. There's been seasons through this entire thing. When this thing started out, we were extremely unified as a country, or unified as people, and then we moved into this like motivation phase where we're like, all right, cool. So I'm going to be stuck at home for like 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. I'm going to plant a garden. I'm going to grow some peppers in my backyard. I'm going to read some books. I'm going to teach myself how to play the guitar. I'm going to do something. I'm going to make something of myself. I'm going to utilize this time for the best. And I think every one of us in this room probably had a moment in this pandemic early on where we thought that I'm going to just make the best of this And this is going to be my motivation to do something that I've always wanted to do. And it's interesting to see how that motivation transferred to complacency. They did a study, or they did, shared some stats with Netflix. Did you guys know that Netflix usage, okay, in 2020 rose 72% weekly? Weekly usage on Netflix in the U.S. rose 72% in 2020. Netflix global paid memberships right now are at 193 million people. They've added 26 million people. They added 26 million people in the first two quarters of 2020. To put that in perspective, Netflix added only 12 million subs in the first half of 2019 and less than 25 million in the entire year before that. And we're two quarters in at this point when this stat came out, and they had already hit 25, 26 million. That's crazy. And if I'm being honest, I totally was one of those people. Y'all, I binged everything. Everything. Started with The Tiger King. That was the first one, right? I don't even know where we're at now. These shows have gotten weird, man. But we sit and we watch them because complacency set in. And we've all experienced the rises and the falls and the roller coasters of this year. And here's kind of how it played out in my personal life. Is the first step was I was very passive about it because I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the response would be. I really didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal. Okay, cool, we'll get shut down for a week. We'll get through this because we never experienced anything before. So I was very passive about it. This isn't a very big deal. And then that moved to me being completely panicked. I'm at the grocery store. I think in 1 week time, I spent $1,200 at the grocery store, and I stocked every freezer, every fridge, every cabinet that I had with a bunch of food, and I'll be honest, I'm still eating it, and I don't think it's good anymore, but it's just the principle of it at this point. Frostbite's okay, right? That's a normal thing. So I moved to panicked, and then after panic came the moment where I became embracive to it. I said, all right, cool, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make the most of this, make the best of this. I'm going to use this to my advantage. I'm going to embrace this moment, and I'm going to make myself better. And that moved to me being motivated to do things I'd never done before, motivated to go and make myself better and to try new things and to learn new things. And then motivation slowly moved to me being extremely lazy. And then that moved to me being even more lazy, and that moved to me being actually just tired, and then tired led to me being completely burnt out, and then burnt out led to me being bitter. And I think that that's where I lived for a long time in this pandemic. For the majority of this pandemic, I lived in a phase of being bitter. If I can be real for a minute, I was very, and still from time to time, am very bitter about the whole thing. We're going to jump into 2 Kings today is where we're going to be hanging out. If you want to pull up your Bibles, if you've got the app on your phone, or if you're old school and bring a Bible with you in here. But this is where we're going to be hanging out today. And I found this story I've read before, but took on a new light as I was preparing for this and started to look at my own personal life. And so I want to be able to walk through this together. And so here's what's happening, just to give you a little context, is that at this time right now, Syria has waged war against Israel. Okay, this all-out war, and every time that they try to ambush the Israelites, every time Syria tries to go in and ambush or trap the Israelites, the Lord would reveal the plans that they had to the prophet Elisha. See, Elisha was a man of God. If you look at his, his history, you look at his prayer life, you look at where he was connected with God, God spoke to him in a way that was miraculous. And so God would go and he would tell Elisha, this is what the Syrian army is going to be doing. This is where they're going to be. And then Elisha would then go and tell the king of Israel what was going on. He'd be like, hey, this is what God said. They're going to be at such and such place at such and such a time, and that's where they're going to be. And he was continually helping the Israelites dodge the attacks from Syria. And you got to imagine this was incredibly frustrating for the Syrian army. This was incredibly frustrating for the king, as he, every single time, he thinks he's got him. He thinks he's going to show up and he's going to surprise them. And every single time they're there and they're waiting. We pick up on verse 8 in chapter 6, it says this. It says, now the king of Syria was at war with Israel. After conferring with his officers, he said, I will set up my camp in such and such a place. Love the vagueness of that. Like, how many times did they go through this motion that the writer literally was like, I'm not even going to try to give you an example. I was at such and such a place. I'll be at such and such a place. And the man of God, talking about Elisha, sent word to the king of Israel, beware of passing that place because the Syrians are going down there. And so the king of Israel checked on that place indicated by Elisha. Time and time again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places. And this enraged the king of Syria. He summoned his officers and he demanded them. He said, tell me, which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? In other words, who's snitching? Who's telling on us? Because there's no other explanation for this. Every single time we get to where we need to be and we've got them cornered, they know we're coming. They know we're there. I want to know which one of you guys is out there snitching on us. Who's telling the king of Israel what we're going to be doing? And they said, no. That's not the way it is. None of us, my lord and king, said one of the officers. But Elisha, pointing fingers, Elisha the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words that you speak in your bedroom. Which is like, we don't really know how it's happening, but let me give you an explanation before you decide to kill somebody that's not snitching on you over here. That we don't know how he knows this, but Elijah's over there hanging out with the king, and he's telling them everything that you are speaking in private quarters where he should not know this stuff. And so, of course, the king gets extremely upset. He says, go and find out where he is so I can send men to capture him. And the report came back that he's in Dothan. And then he sent horses and he sent chariots and he sent strong forces there. And they went by night and they surrounded the city that the Israelite army was at with Elijah there. And when the servant of the man of God, the servant of Elijah, woke up that morning, he went out early the next morning, and an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city, and he cried out, oh no, my Lord, what shall we do? The servant asked. And I wonder how many of us are currently or have been or right now sitting in the place where you can side and you can understand what the servant might have been going through. I feel like every single day I wake up and I see something new that's happening or some new changes that are happening and I throw my hands up in the air and I get panicked and I get defeated and I get angry and I get bitter and I throw my hands up and I say, God, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to tell my kid that I don't know how to fix what he's going through? There's nothing I can do to make that reality better for him. How am I supposed to get motivated to get up and do anything where it looks like we're going to be shut down again, looks like we're going to be back in this place again? And I wonder how many of us can understand what the servant might have been going through at this time. When he comes running out, he sees this army surrounding. He knows about God. He knows that God is a provider. He knows that God can be there for him. But at this point, he's not looking about that. He's not thinking about all that. He's thinking about is this army that has surrounded the camp. And he says, oh God, what are we going to do? There's been an interesting roller coaster of my personal experience with this pandemic. And so if I can just be a little bit transparent with you guys this morning, one of the things I love about this church is that it allows me as a pastor to not be okay sometimes. I think so many times churches, they say it from the pulpit, it's okay to not be okay, and that never goes for the pastoral staff or goes to the people who are on staff. I'm telling you, I've not been okay through this. My journey through this has been ups and downs and ups and downs, and it started with for me personally, there was a little bit of excitement, a little bit of novelty, a little bit of newness at the beginning of this. And here's why, is that when I came to or back to Essential Church a year and a half ago, or however long it was, I came back on as the communications pastor. And you've heard Pastor Steve talk about how they didn't even know why they needed a communications pastor. Thank God they needed one, I guess, or I wouldn't be standing here anymore. But this was a new season for me, and so I had prepared. I had been doing a lot of reading. Pastor Steve had challenged me, I'd read like 7 books on church communication and marketing strategies and all of these things, and I was prepared for this new season going into this new year, and I was ready to tackle this. I had written out all these strategies I wanted to do, all these things that I wanted to do, and then this pandemic happened, and everything that I had read, all those books, everything got thrown out. None of it applied anymore. Literally none of it. Everything that I was reading about how to communicate and how to engage with churches and how to create things that people are excited about, that they want to invite people to, and to build all these things that people want to come and be a part of, all that got thrown out the window, and all of a sudden we're looking at a brand new thing that nobody had ever, it was territory unknown, and if I'm being honest, the innovator inside of me was very excited about this moment. I was excited because it was like, all right, cool, we get to do something maybe that's never been done before. And maybe I can take all this knowledge that I've been gaining and all this stuff that I've been reading about and apply it to a new situation, and we get to be pioneers here and pave a new path. And so we immediately began asking, what is it that we can do? And the first question that we asked was, what can we do for our community? What can we do for our community? And if you were around for this, you may have saw this. The very first thing that we did, we put out a COVID-19 need thread. And this was just designed to literally be on Facebook for our community, our church community, to be able to hop on there because we're shorthanded as a staff. We have like 7-8 people on staff. And there's a lot of you guys. We wanted to make sure we were able to meet the need of our community. We knew we couldn't do it alone. And so we put this on Facebook for our community to be able to talk with each other, share the needs, meet a need, things like that. And without us doing anything at all, this thing blew up. People were sharing it and sharing it and sharing it, and we were getting hundreds of people every single day that were responding on this and asking for things and needing things, and it was flat out overwhelming. We had all of us on staff that were trying to meet needs. We had a lot of you guys that had stepped in and said, I'll help, and you were on there. You were delivering food to people's doors, and that's where we found about this need for toilet paper, which is what led to the toilet paper drives that we started doing here at Essential, which was so exciting. That was supposed to just be 1 week, and that ended up being 13 weeks of us giving out this toilet paper. And here's what's crazy. Check this out. In the very first month of this pandemic, we as a church saw 300,000 unique people interact with our Facebook page. If that's not blowing your mind, that's nuts. That's nuts. That's like, you don't see that. Churches will go literally their entire. We saw more people in 1 month interact with our page than we had seen in the lifetime of our Facebook page. And it was super, super exciting. And I'm managing the social media platforms, and I'm helping to stay connected with people. And then after that, we're like, okay, we're meeting needs, but how can we make sure that we're still together as a community? Since we can't meet in person, we need to have as many options as possible to keep our community together, to keep them interacting with one another. And so we started as a church to think about all the different ways that we could have services in an online setting. And at one point in this pandemic, if you guys don't know about what I do here, I do all the video work, all the graphic work, all the digital work. And so basically, even though we were coming up to the church and you know, Pastor Steve was preaching and Pastor Chris was doing the welcome stuff and we had the band doing all that stuff, I would take all that content and then I would sit down on a computer and I'd put it all together as a full service and make sure that it was something that could play. And you guys all thought it was live. Ha, it wasn't live. Sorry, I'm giving away my jokes here, but this we were pre-recording everything. And so at one point in this pandemic, this is what was happening, okay? Sunday we had service, okay? I had to produce two different ones because Facebook didn't like the fact that we had our bumper video on there. It kept flagging that for copyright laws, even though we were well within our Fair Use Act. They kept flagging that one. They kept flagging our worship. They kept pulling that down. And so I had to make a complete separate one for the Facebook that I did for the actual church online platform. We developed the church online platform, and that particular service played it four different times, and all four of those times had to be staffed by moderators and people, hosts that were on our platform, and I was there for every one of them because I was so excited about interacting with our church community and seeing this grow. Throughout the week, we did three kids programs. We had an elementary program, a pre-K program, and a fourth and fifth grade program, and all of those were being developed on this computer, put together with intros, outros, content that we were getting from other people, putting those together, getting those online. That was three times a week. That was on Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, and then on Wednesday, we had Celebrate Recovery, which is a whole nother thing that was, and I was doing every bit of this, and here's the thing, I was loving every second of it. But man, I was working constantly, constantly. This is what would happen. I'd wake up in the morning, I'd make a pot of coffee, I'd go sit on the couch, I'd drink the first cup, I'd get up to get a second cup. It was 3 o'clock and the coffee pot had been off for hours. And I had no idea where the time was going. I didn't know what day it was. The only way I knew what day it was by what service we were airing that night. That was it. Was it Tuesday? It was Kids Day. That's right. That's tonight's Kids Day. But I was like super excited about it all, but it was only supposed to last for like a few weeks, right? Well, then it didn't. And I hit a place of burnout, man, that was like, it was bad. Like I'm sharing way too much with you people, but there was times where I'd go for days without even getting a shower. I'd sit right there on that couch and I'm just pounding away, and I'm interacting with people on Facebook, and I'm building these things, and I'm putting all this stuff out for communications and building all of these services for people to interact with, and then I hit a place where I hit burnout, and burnout led to me being extremely, extremely bitter. I wasn't bitter at the church. I wasn't bitter that I was working. I wasn't bitter because I felt like they were making me do anything. I want to make sure I clear that up right now. They weren't asking me to do anything that was outside of my boundaries, but I was overworking myself. This was a personal thing. I was overworking myself, and I got to a place where I became extremely bitter, and everything was constantly changing, constantly, every single day, and I started to get to a place where I was craving, absolutely craving normalcy. Because every Tuesday at 2 o'clock, as we awaited the king's address to find out when what's changing, what are we doing today? What are we doing with how's our protocol going to be changing this week? What is it that we have to do this week? How far away do we have to put the chairs this week? How far, you know, all these things every week. And it became the point where every time it would happen, I would get so angry at it. Because innovation is fun, but man, this is ridiculous. Every single week it's changing. And everything that I built, all the templates, all the things that I put in place was changing on a weekly basis, and I hit full-out burnout. And that bitterness turned to straight anger. And here's the things that I was feeling anger about. I was feeling anger about the church. I was feeling anger because I had just gotten back to Essential, and man, Essential was thriving, booming, couldn't fit anybody else in here on a Sunday morning if we wanted to. We're having conversations about all kinds of things. What do we do? How do we move people around? You know, we've got some great excitement, some great energy. God is building the kingdom here inside this church, and then boom. It all shuts down. I was angry for my kids. I was angry that my 9-year-old was having to go through something that no 9-year-old should ever have to go through, and I had no idea what to tell him. I was angry that I had a 10-month-old daughter who was not going to even get to experience the world because I wouldn't let her out of the house, which led to me not letting my wife out of the house. And I was angry about that because my poor wife was stuck inside the house in quarantine, in a prison, locked inside the house at all hours of the day. And I know I was just protecting her. I was doing everything. I was doing the grocery shopping. I was doing, you're not leaving the house. And in my mind, I'm just protecting her. But I watched as it just killed her little by little by little. And she went absolutely cabin crazy, stir crazy. And she, you know, my wife's a hairstylist. She travels to other people's homes. People come to our home. And all that got shut down. So we lost income. We lost her being able to go and interact with other adults. And so all she had all day was a 9-year-old that trying to figure out virtual learning and a infant that can't do anything for herself, and that was her life every single day for this pandemic. And then I became angry at all the rules. Every time I would get out of my car and get right to the doors of the stinking grocery store, y'all know what I'm talking about. Let me ask you a question. I might be y'all. I'm sorry if this is wrong. Y'all ever just sit there and watch people? Like, you know for a fact that person's going to get all the way to the door and they've forgotten their mask. I'm a people watcher, man. Now, especially now that my wife goes to the grocery store, I just sit in the car because I did that for 6 months and I'm done with that. So you can go now. And so I'll sit in the car and I'll just sit there and laugh as people get all the way up to the door and they do that. And then they turn around, they start walking back. It happens every time for me too. I hate it. Every time a new rule would come out, I would get angry, I would get bitter, and that was my experience. And I have a feeling that yours is very probably similar, but also kind of different at the same time, because I think every single one of us in this room have experienced something different through this season. We've experienced these roller coasters, and it's looked different in your own life, but show of hands, how many of you have found yourself in a place of bitterness or anger this year? Again, if you're not raising your hand, you like tofu turkey. Sorry if you actually like that stuff, but poof. See, some of you are probably sitting here right now, like me, and you're able to really kind of connect and understand what the servant went through, and you're in that place of the servant where every single morning you're waking up and you're walking out and you're going, what do I do now, God? So picking back up in this story, this is interesting as it continues here. We're going to pick back up in verse 16. Elisha, okay, so you've got the servant. He comes out and he goes, what do we do? And Elisha says, don't be afraid. And you got to think for a moment, okay? Here's this servant who is standing in the middle of camp, who is surrounded by a Syrian army, and the only thing Elisha can say is, don't be afraid. Clown, are you looking right now? They have chariots and horses and whatever they had back then, weapons of all kinds and slingshots or whatever they were carrying around. They have all. How are you going to sit there and tell me not to be afraid? But he says, those who are with us are more than those who are with them. And again, you got to imagine this guy standing there going, nuh-uh, you lie. This, unless you're hiding people in basements under the tents, there's no way this is true. And Elisha prayed this. He said, open his eyes, Lord, so that he may see. And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked, and he saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. And as the enemy came down toward him, Elisha prayed to the Lord, strike this army with blindness. So he struck them with blindness as Elisha had asked. Now, I don't think that this was necessarily full out like they became blind. I think as you continue reading on, they more than likely were just disoriented and didn't understand what was going on. But check this out, man. Elisha goes full Jedi. This is so crazy. And I'm sorry that I'm being nerdy right now, but he does. This is what he says. Ready? This is not the road and this is not the city. Is that too nerdy? I laughed, man. Come on. That's something. I mean, that is straight up. That's Obi-Wan Kenobi on the Tatooine planet saying, this is not the droid that you're looking for. He says, this is not the road and this is not the city. Follow me and I will lead you to the man that you are looking for. Elisha's standing in front of these people. He's who they're looking for. And he's saying, no, I'm not the guy you're looking for. Follow me. I'll take you. That's why I don't think necessarily that they were blinded, because he takes them to Samaria, and there was a pretty good massive distance between those two places where they were at. So I don't think they were necessarily blind. I think that they were just in a place of mentality of disorientation where they didn't know what was going on. But check this out. After they entered the city, so Elijah leads them all the way to Samaria. After they enter the city, Elisha says, Lord, open the eyes of these men so that they can see. And then the Lord opened their eyes and they looked and they were there inside of Samaria. Y'all can imagine that, man. Like, you're standing there and you have the upper hand. You're surrounding the camp that you need to be at. You've got Elisha. He's right there. And the next thing you know, you're standing in the middle of a town that's nowhere near where you were, and you're completely surrounded by the enemy. And when the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elisha, shall I kill them? And he said, do not kill them, he answered. Would you kill those who have captured with your own sword or bow? See, at this time, it wasn't a cool thing. If you capture somebody, you didn't just kill them. It's not what you did at this point. And it said, would you kill those that you have captured? Set food and water before them so that they may eat and drink and then go back to their master. So he prepared a great feast for them. And after they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away and they returned to their master. And the Syrians did not come again, raids into the land of Israel. Just like that. There's a lot going on in this story, but this story is wild if you think about it. There's a lot going on here, but the theme of this story centers around the ability to see. The ability to see. Where is God working in your life right now that you can't see? See, back in the beginning of this year, I made some resolutions. I was coming out of a very difficult time. I had spent some years in New England. Long story short, I got super, super burned out. I was in a very deep, dark place, which led me to be able to, you know, get some things back in order. I saw God do some incredible things in my life in 2019. Beyond the stress and the burnout that I felt, I was able to get back to Essential. I was able to get back into a church environment that I was extremely happy in. I began to rekindle my passion with ministry and be able to strike a great work-home-life balance, which made me more at home and more present. I was building a community again. I was building friends. I was building up places to be able to spend time with and building up relationships. My home balance was in a good place. I was able to be there. I was able to be present. And isn't it funny how I see all of these blessings in 2019? I make resolutions at the beginning of 2020, and 2 months into it, I've literally forgotten about all of this. It's funny how quickly we can forget about God's faithfulness. I'd be willing to bet that if you're in this room and you've called yourself a Christian or you've been in a walk with God for a long period of time, at one point in your life you've experienced a blessing, and I'd also be willing to bet that at one point in your life you've forgotten about that blessing and you're back to standing like the servant of Elijah and you're asking God, what do I do now? I found myself clinging to every reason in the world to be angry. I had blessing upon blessing upon blessing. My daughter is a miracle. We tried for 9 years to have another child, and that was a blessing from God that we had literally hung up the door, closed the door, said, we're not doing this anymore. And God said, nah, I didn't close that door. And all of a sudden, I've got this beautiful daughter in my life. And 2 months into it, I had already forgotten about that blessing. And I was angry. And I found every excuse that I could to be able to be angry in every situation. And one of the things is that I struggle with control issues. And maybe you do too. When I'm out of control of a situation, what I don't understand or I have no ability to manipulate or ability to fix things, you know, it's like the guy thing, right? You guys are married, you have a wife, and every time she comes to me and she just wants to, and I just want to fix things because that's just the way that I am, and she's like, no, I just want you to listen. If I can't be in control of a situation, if I can't fix anything, I become extremely angry, and so I struggle with these control issues, and it's usually in moments like that that I feel out of control that I'm more prone to doubt God. You know, this servant from Elisha, he knew God. He knew that God was faithful. He knew that God was on their side. But in this moment where he felt out of control, the immediate thing that he began to do was to doubt God. And so often I find myself like this, like the servant, in a place where, frankly, my vision, my ability to see, for lack of better terms, sucks. I'm not able to see what's going on in my own life because I'm clouded by the lack of control. I'm clouded by the anger that I'm feeling. I'm clouded by the bitterness that I'm feeling or the things that I'm going through, the trials that I'm going through. See, I mentioned this last, sermon that I preached back at the beginning of 2020 was all about resolutions. And so I went and I started doing some digging and I found my list of resolutions that I had made back at the beginning of 2020. And there were three things on this list. Number one, slow down. Number two, be more present. And number three, be more content. See, God was working the whole time, but my vision was so impaired that I wasn't able to see what he was doing in my own personal life. And I wonder how many of us are sitting in this room right now are completely missing what God is trying to do that you can't see right now because your perspective is completely out of whack. And so we've got 1 month left in 2020 before we head into this next year where, let's be honest, things are not going to change anytime soon. We're still going to be sitting in this for a little while. Let's shift our perspectives together. Let's shift our perspectives in a way that lets us be able to see the blessings that God has, to be able to rely on his faithfulness in a way that we never have before. It's time to shift our perspectives. See, I've learned three things this year, and I want to let you in on them because these three things are something I tell myself every single day because I am still dealing with this. I still wake up angry. I still wait for the Tuesday at 2:00 declaration from the king. I still sit and I wait for those moments and I feel it stirring inside of me. Let me share with you the three things that I've done this year to help combat this. The first thing is this right here, is an understanding that I get to choose my perspective. You sitting in this room right now have the power to choose the perspective that you're going to have in your own personal life. You get to choose how to respond to adversity. You get to choose how to respond when bad things happen. And the question is, will you be like the servant in these moments? Will you come running out with your arms up in the air saying, God, what do I do? What do I do? Where do I go? Will you spread negativity? Social media, man, is about as toxic of an environment as I've ever seen in my life. And I have to be on it every day because I manage the social media here at the church. And I try to find opportunities to be able to not be in it all the time. But I get into this mode where I do this mindless scrolling and I'm just captivated by all of the negativity that I see constantly from people. And it infiltrates my own personal life. Because it's just one post after another about how this is bad and my life is horrible and they did this. And man, we are living in a time where it's never been easier for you to just take your dirty laundry and put it out for everybody to see it, and we all do it. Why? Whatever happened to us doing things alone, whatever happened to us going through things alone, why do we feel the need to share our negativity with others? Is it because Facebook is some massive support group or country club where we get together and we air out our dirty laundry and it makes me feel better about myself because what he said and what she said is way worse than what I'm going through? But let me tell you about it. It's like a bunch of one-uppers. Someone says, I'm going through this, and all the comments are like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Let me tell you about what I'm going through. And it's just so much negativity. Is that what you're doing right now? Or are you in a place where you've literally just given up? My question for you is, you choose your perspective. Can you choose to look beyond the immediate? Can you choose to look beyond what you can physically see to the unseen realm of God? Will you look beyond that? Will you choose joy? Will you choose peace? Will you choose to alter your perspective? Because you have the power to do that. That was number one. Here's the second thing I learned, is that prayer is essential. I have prayed more this year than perhaps I ever have in my entire life, and it's because every single day I hit a point where I feel as though I don't know what to do, I don't know how to act, I don't know how to respond, and my first number one response that I've tried to make every single time, I'm not perfect in this, but I try to go to God to change my sight, change my perspective. And here's the thing, you cannot do this alone. Prayer is wonderful, but looking at this story, who was it that prayed? Who was it that prayed for the servant? It was Elisha. You need people in your life who are going to pray for you, who are going to build you up, who you can call and say, hey man, I'm going through this and I'm not able to see clearly what God is doing. And listen, you have the power to pray it yourself. You can say, God, reveal to me that I cannot see. Reveal to me the unseen. But man, it's so much more powerful if you can do that with somebody else who can speak into your life for you and call you out on your negativity, call you out on the things that you're dealing with and say, I'm praying for that God shows you the clarity, that shows you the unseen, that shows you the army that is surrounding your camp right now that you can't even see. Pray for peace. Pray for joy. Pray for contentment. Pray for gratitude. Because I firmly believe that the only way we're going to be able to capture those, to be able to change our perspective, is to pray that God gives us that. God, give me contentment. God, give me peace in this time. And the last thing is this, that God is working even when I don't see it. God is working even when I don't see it. Whatever it is that you might be going through right now, like I said before, I realize that every one of us in this room has a different story. Every one of us has been affected differently by this season that we've walked through in 2020. We've lost jobs. We've lost loved ones. We've been isolated. We've been stressed out. We've seen financial stress. We've seen all these. Everyone's dealing with it in different. Some of you may have experienced every single one of those things, but guess what? God is still working. He's still working, even if you can't see it. See, God is big, and what we see here on earth is so finite. It's so minuscule in comparison to what God, there is an unseen realm. The Bible talks about this all the time, how we have faith in what we cannot see. There's so much at work that you don't understand, that you don't see, and we have to believe it and speak it into our life that God is working, even if we can't see it. It may feel like he's abandoned you, but hear me today, he has not. Do not let the enemy distract you from what God is doing in your life. And I know you're sitting there thinking, okay, Alex, it's so easy for you to sit up there and say that you can just get up there and pray all these things into your life, but I don't have an Elijah in my life. You don't need that. Hear me when I tell you, God has given you the ability to be able to speak this into your own life, to ask God to change your perspective to that which is unseen. He has not abandoned you. We see this multiple times in Scripture. Two instances of it really fast. 2 Corinthians 4:18. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Temporary. These are temporary problems, and I know it seems like it's a big deal, and I know it seems like the world might be crashing down around you and that there is no hope, but hear me when I tell you that God has bigger plans for you. That this is a temporary thing. We need to fix our eyes, fix our gaze, fix our entire being and on all that we're doing and all of our perspective on the fact that we can't see everything, but we can pray to God today to reveal to us what is unseen in our own lives. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. You can have the assurance today in your own personal life that God is going to move. And here's what's crazy. Okay, I look back at those New Year's resolutions that I made, the idea of being more present, the idea of being home more, the idea of being able to slow down a little bit, all those things. And I missed all of that. You want to know why I missed all of that? Because it was completely out of the context of what I thought it should have been delivered in. And how many of us are sitting in this room going right now that, God, you have not shown up, and God is saying, I have, it just wasn't the way you were expecting. And you missed it. We got 1 month left in 2020. And here's where I want to challenge you this morning. I don't care where you're at. I don't care if you're single, if you're a father, if you're a mother, if you're a brother, if you're a sister, I don't care where you're at. I'm talking to everybody in this room right now. Here's what you can declare over your life to this morning, for the rest of this year, for the rest of your life. God is working. He's working. And if you tell yourself that every single day, if you tell your kids that, if when your 9-year-old comes running up to you and he's got tears running down his face because he's at his wit's end, because Schoology's done broke again, or his microphone isn't working, or his teacher told him that he wasn't paying attention, or he failed a test because he doesn't interact like that. He doesn't learn that way. He needs to be able to be face-to-face and be able to, you know, vocally be able to understand these things. I know you've experienced it, parents. I know you've experienced it. Your kids have been in this place before, and I've, like you, not knowing what to say. Here's what I can say. Here's what you can say. God is working. And how amazing would it be for an older brother to be able to declare that over his younger sister, or a husband to be able to declare that over his wife or over his family? And I wonder if you would be so bold today, right this minute. I know you're all thinking about it. It's in your head. Whatever it is that you're dealing with right now, whatever that burden is that you're carrying, whatever it is that you're waiting for God to reveal to you, what it is that you're not seeing clearly, I know you've got it in your head right now. And I wonder if you'd be so bold on the count of three to declare out loud, God is working. Think about it. Put it in your head. Put it in perspective. Think about what that thing is on the count of three. 1, 2, 3. God is working. Try this out. Speak it into your life. And it may not be something that immediately changes, but your perspective will begin to shift. Your perspective will begin to change. You'll begin to look at things differently because you'll be able to see what is unseen. You have the power to be able to do that. God has given that to you. You just have to ask for it. And so whatever it is this year is going to throw at you, whatever it is that you're dealing with now, whatever it is you're going to deal with next month, whatever it is you're going to deal with in 2021, because it isn't going to get easier anytime soon, declare it over your life. God is working. God, help me to see what is unseen. Help me to see that you have an army surrounding me that I cannot see right now. And I know you're moving and you're working, and it may not be the way that I thought you were going to, but help me to be okay with that. Help me to see it from your perspective. Help me to hear from you in a way that is absolutely supernatural, and absolutely in a way that lets me understand that I'm not in control, but God, you are, and God, you are working through this, because this life is temporary, man. And there wasn't at any point in the Bible that God told you that this life was going to be peaches and rainbows and all these other things. He said, you will have trouble. You will have trouble, but take heart. It's going to be okay. God is working. Speak it over your life. Speak it over your family. Speak it over your spouse. Speak it over your parents. Speak it over your friends. Speak it over people who may think you're crazy for saying it. Be bold in this moment. When you've got someone coming to you and they say, I don't know what to do anymore, look right back at them and say, God is working. And they may not even know who God is, but man, what an opportunity to be able to share that joy. Paul, we hear this in Scripture, always be willing to give an account for the hope that you have in your life. There's a hope that you can have today because of Jesus Christ, because of the cross. You can have that hope today, and you can spread that to others, and you can declare in your life that regardless of whether I see it right now, God is still working. He's still with you. He's still beside you. He has not abandoned you. Do not let the enemy rob you of the blessing that God has for you through this next season. Can we close in prayer this morning? God, I thank you so much for opportunities like this to be able to get a perspective change. And it's not going to be easy, and it's going to literally be every single day of our life that we're going to fight this battle. And some days we're going to win it, some days we're not, some days are going to be bad, some days we're going to wake up in full-out anger and frustration and bitterness as to what's going on. But God, allow us to find opportunities to be able to sit back, realize we can't see, ask you to be able to see what is unseen, and declare over our own lives that you are working regardless of whether we can see it. God, we're so thankful that we have victory through your Son, Jesus Christ. That regardless of what this life throws at us, there is an eternity that awaits for us. Father, allow us to find moments in this uncertainty to see you work, to see you move. Shift our perspective in a way that only you can. Open our eyes to that which is unseen. We pray this in your name. Amen.